Hey, podcast fam. Welcome to another episode of Motherhood in Black and White. I'm Kanji.
I'm Tara.
And we're so happy that you could join us on this week's episode. If you listened to last week's episode, you will understand and know that we ended with Tara a little bit on a rough note.
A little bit.
Last week was kind of rough for you.
Yes, it was. And yes, it was. And looking forward, I was not expecting it to get much better.
And apparently it didn't.
It did not. However, my word was survive, and I did that. So there we go. It's a win.
Right. So if you've been listening to us for a while, you know that sometimes we just like to give ourselves words of the week to get us through. And last week, Tara's word was survive.
That's right.
Not because of the Beyonce song.
No, but it did help.
It did help a little bit. Helps to remind us that we are all survivors.
Correct.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. 1 in 8 women in America will be diagnosed with breast cancer. And breast cancer disproportionately kills women of color. Did you know that?
I learned that from you. You and I talked about this, just we teased on it a little bit once.
I think we did. Yeah. Yes. So even though Black women are not diagnosed with breast cancer at rates of white women, if a Black woman is diagnosed with breast cancer, she has a 31% chance of death.
That's incredible.
It's so tragic. Mm-hmm. And we've made some great strides medically with breast cancer detection and awareness and treatment, but we still have so far to go.
So far to go.
So today, kind of hearkening back a little bit to your word of the week, last week of survive, we're going to talk about how we're all survivors. And we're going to bring on board a new voice to our conversation. Welcome to the family, somebody I am really excited about meeting, Shallon Fuller. Coach Shal, she's going to join us to talk about her journey of survivorship, and we are so excited to meet her. Coach Shal, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So share with our family a little bit about you, kind of who you are, what makes you tick, and if you would please tell us your story of breast cancer survival.
Sure. So I'm a mom, first and foremost. I have a 9-year-old daughter. I'm a coach. I'm a high school cross-country coach, and I'm a runner myself. I've been a runner since a very young age. I started running on a team when I was 5 years old.
Wow.
Can't quit it. My day job, I'm a head of people for autonomous technology at Lyft. I've been in tech for a really long time. Spent about 17 years at Google, working across so many different areas. But coaching and parenting, which I think are very similar, at least the way I approach them, I think are probably my true passions. Yeah, a little bit about my survivorship. I'm a cancer survivor and a breast cancer pre-vivor.
Pre-vivor. Can you tell us what that
pre-vivor
means?
Pre-vivor. You alluded a little bit in your intro that they've made so much advancement in breast cancer detection, and I'm a huge benefactor of that. So pre-vivor is someone who was able to get screening and understand that they may be at overt risk to breast cancer. So you may have heard of BRCA or BRCA mutations. There's BRCA1 and BRCA2, and these are two genes that help repair cells to avoid people getting cancer. But if you have a mutation in one of those genes, then they almost can guarantee with really high rates of prediction that you will get breast cancer or ovarian cancer. And I am a BRCA2. I have a BRCA2 mutation that I inherited from my dad's side of the family. And when I got diagnosed with that, we went through a lot of conversations with my doctors to figure out what the treatment would be. And just given the very high rate, that likelihood that I would get breast cancer, somewhere in like the 80 percentage point total that I would somehow get breast cancer before I was 70, I elected to do a prophylactic double mastectomy in 2017.
Wow.
And then just a year ago, I just had a milestone. A year ago on October 10th was my 1-year anniversary from having a prophylactic oophorectomy, which is easier way to think about it maybe is like a partial hysterectomy. And so the good news is that I'm not going to get breast cancer and I'm not going to get ovarian cancer.
Very good.
That's
very
so good. I preempted it. That's what pre-viver means, is that you didn't get it, even though you knew you were going to probably likely get it. Yeah. And then in 2006, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And I actually did have thyroid cancer, and I had my thyroid removed. I guess that was about 14 years ago.
Wow. Yeah.
You mentioned the BRCA2 mutation. How did you find the genetic mutation?
My aunt, my paternal aunt, was diagnosed with ovarian cancer really late. That's the really tricky thing about ovarian cancer, is that the surveillance is really bad, and they tell you that. So that if they screen you and they find it, it's not great news, because it's pretty far along at that point. And so she was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer, and she fought it bravely for 9 years. But she also was very courageous and shared with me and other folks in our family about her mutation. So I was able to get the genetic testing.
Wow, that's incredible. So you said your daughter is 9.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes. So you were kind of going through all of this when she was pretty young, 7 or 8, it sounds like, or 6, 7, it sounds like.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. So 2017, I had a double mastectomy. She was born 2011, so she wasn't quite 6. She was 5 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was interesting to kind of figure out how we talk about that. And we just told her that mommy had to go to the hospital because her boobs were sick.
That would have prompted a lot more questions from my 6-year-old, I think.
Right.
Did she just kind of roll with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just spoke about it really matter-of-factly. I wasn't scared. And she said, I'm just going to go. I'll be back. And then, you know, I had a lot of recovery. And we just said, mommy needs to rest. And, you know, she just kind of trusted that everything was going to be okay. And I was really, I had a pretty smooth recovery. I was, you know, I was really healthy going into it.
That's good.
My first question to my doctors is always, you know, okay, so how long until I can start running?
When can I start running again?
Yeah. And we have to tell you, you don't know this, Coach Shao, but Tara has been fangirling on you since 2016.
A little bit.
She's and we're going to get to that a little bit. I'm going to let Tara kind of talk to you about her unhealthy obsession with you. She is also unhealthily obsessed with Zac Efron. So you are in really good company, Coach Shao. Yeah.
Wow.
But you were talking about the diagnosis, and you were really young. You were in your 30s when you decided to have the preventative double mastectomy. How did that feel as a young mom?
Yeah.
Can you just talk with us a little bit about how you felt and also being the mother of a daughter who potentially could have this genetic mutation, some of those thoughts and feelings that you're going through and you've gone through.
Yeah. It was part of the reason why it took me so long on when to decide to do the surgery. Because I wasn't sure if I was done having children, which I can still have children and I have a mastectomy, but I wouldn't be able to nurse. And how did I feel about that? And there was a lot of weeding through, like, how to balance putting yourself first, how to be there for your child, or maybe a future child. So it was very complicated. It's a lot of imperfect information. And I was just really fortunate to have great doctors and friends to just, you know, seek counsel about. Unfortunately, my aunt passed away before I could really talk to her much about all of it. But I had other family members who were able to, you know, just listen to me and help me walk through it. But it's definitely, you know, very layered as a woman.
Yeah.
As a runner, you know, I never really felt like a strong association, like my image, like in my breasts were like not really part of my like physique, you know. I'm just like sports bra, like but I think I was surprised at how emotional it was, and probably because I had a young child, I had nursed her for a year, and I maybe underweighted that connection with my body in that way.
Yeah.
And it really hit me when I was speaking with my surgeons ahead of the surgery and just figuring out who my surgeon was going to be and what I should be expecting. And this one surgeon said, you know, said very matter-of-factly, you're basically having an amputation.
Mm. Yeah.
And that really was heavy. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big deal. So it took me a while to get the courage up to do it. And then I think once I made up my mind, you know, I was just ready, like, to do it. I think I was in the waiting room to go into my surgery, and I was already reading A Champion's Comeback, the book. I was like, I'm already coming back from this thing.
Planning the comeback.
Hey, planning the comeback. So in 2016, you competed for the U.S. Olympic trial team. Isn't that right?
I did. I competed in the U.S. Olympic trials for the marathon in 2016 and in 2008.
That's amazing. So I will, full disclosure, I didn't know your name by, you know, recognition, but as soon as I heard 2016 US Marathon Trials, I watched that trial. And I immediately was like, oh, it was the one in LA. It was the hottest one record. Galen won his first marathon he ever ran. Shalane collapsed at the finish line. I just started like rattling all this stuff, and Teva and Kanji were both looking at me like, what?
Fangirl.
I watched the entire thing. And so, but I did see, was that a tough day for you?
That was a very tough day for me. I went into it. I had qualified the December before, so it was very close. I had done the same thing in 2008. It was about 7 weeks in between the qualifier and the race. And
wow.
I came into it with a foot injury, and we did everything we could to kind of get it ready to go and hold on that day. But let's see, about mile six or so, I just landed weird on a curb on my foot, and it totally gave way.
Man.
And I stayed in for another 8 miles, and then just decided that this was silly. It was getting hotter. You know, it was... People were like dropping out. I remember seeing one, the elite men went by me like locomotives. And then like 3 miles later at the start, because it was loops, I saw one of them just kind of hands on knees. And I was like, you know what? This is silly. I need to just, you know, live to race another day and not like ruin my foot. So I sadly had to drop out at about mile 14 of that trials. But I was really proud that I got there and I did everything that I could. And, you know, sometimes you have to make those calls and just kind of see the bigger picture.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, like you said, the most elite runners in the world struggled through that race. A lot of people didn't make it through that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a tough day.
And you were preparing for the 2020 Olympic trials, right?
Yes, I was trying to make a comeback for the 2020 trials. Had really good buildups for it. I just got really unlucky. Couple of times I got sick a couple of times right before some race efforts. And then, you know, I think it was coming to a point where I was really needed to think about these surgeries. You know, I was already kind of pushing the envelope for the age recommendations for these surgeries. And I think I decided to do the double mastectomy and I tried to come back and, you know, it was just too hard to come back from everything that was going on in my life. The surgeries. 2017 was maybe my hardest year on record. I had the double mastectomy, and in between my two surgeries, I had the mastectomy and then I had reconstruction about 12 weeks apart. And in between that time, my dad passed away. Really suddenly. And so I think 2017 was rough and, you know, was just trying to come back into it. So, I think I have another cycle in me. I'll be 46 at the next, trials. I think never say never. I think, I don't think it's not on the table. I think it's possible if I decide to kind of throw everything at it.
Yeah. You're a survivor, and I thank you for sharing your story, and you're so courageous. A lot of women go through things, health challenges and issues, and not realizing that there are other people that are also going through them, and as courageously as you've gone through everything, thank you for that. Thank you for that. I know that in 2017, you just shared with us that your father passed away. What's your favorite memory of your father?
I have a photo from the 2016 trials that's very dear to me. He was giving me a hug as I was walking towards the starting line. He wasn't able to come to the 2008 trials. And, you know, LA was my hometown, and it's where I started running. And he was a huge champion for me in that area. So for him to be there was really special. And at the time, I didn't know, you know, he was going to pass away a year from then.
Right.
So, you know, so that was, you know, it's a really, it's hard for me to look at the photo without getting emotional. Mm-hmm. But he was my biggest champion. It, you know, from the time I was like a little kid, you know, he was like, she can do anything she wants to, like, beat the boys, like, you know, like, be an Olympian if she wants. I mean,
yeah.
So I just never had any limit. He was always just my biggest supporter. And so that's how I think about him.
Coach, you had mentioned about the BRCA gene mutation. It is more prevalent in the Black community and for Black women than it is for white women. And your ethnic background, it's an interesting mix. You are biracial. Your father was Black.
That's right.
And you appear facially white to some people.
Yes.
I think that's okay to say.
Yes.
I mean, how has, so living as, and do you identify as a Black woman?
I identify as, I think, biracial,
okay.
You know, as, you know, and, you know, I identify as myself. I definitely feel a connection to both sides of my family. I was close to my dad and my mom, but yes, I walk around this world and people see me probably as a white woman at face value. Like when I walk in a store or walk in a room, right?
Yeah.
So it's fair to say that. And I think I identify as a biracial woman.
You know, and that's interesting. My son is biracial and he appears facially Black. He identifies as Black, but I think for him, he's 11. It's because that's the world sees him as.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is white. It's like, I don't see him as a Black kid. I see him as white. And he's like, he's my son. Of course I see him as white. I said, well, the rest of the world sees him as Black.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I even talk to Roman about President Obama. I said, no one or very few people refer to President Obama as the first biracial president.
That's right.
And it's sad and it's disheartening to me because my son's father, my husband, is Italian American. And so he's as much Italian American and should be proud of that heritage as he is Black and proud of that ethnicity. But it's taken from him because of what society perceives him to look like and to be, you know, just like my great grandfather is Irish, but I would look like a straight fool if I was here wearing a Kiss Me, I'm Irish shirt. But I'm like, hey, why can't I claim my Irish heritage?
Do what you want.
Right, you should. In 2021, we're going to be celebrating.
We're going to do what we want.
Yes. We are definitely going to be celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
I'm going to be dancing an Irish jig. You know, but I love that you can not put yourself in a box. And you can proclaim that you're biraciality, and it's wonderful. But I find it so interesting when someone who is biracial, who kind of can go through life, we some of us talk about the passing, you know,
right,
and what that must feel like or seem like without without discounting either or both sides of your heritage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Was that difficult? You know, growing up as a kid, out in public with your family, or just like in other areas where people might be saying things, and you want to go like, "Hey, you know, my dad is Black." You know what I mean? Did you have that kind of experience?
I've had a couple of experiences like that. I mean, by and large, I grew up in LA. Both my parents were really involved in my athletics and sports, and there were a lot of kids and families around us that were similar.
Okay.
So I think, you know, in my own family, I think my dad's side especially was very accepting. It's, you know, it's not lost on me that I look a lot different than my cousins and my siblings.
Yeah.
And especially this year, you know, thought a lot about that.
Yeah.
You know, my dad always told me that this is going to be kind of to your advantage in some ways in terms of being able to see people's true colors. He said people are going to say things around you that they won't say otherwise, and you're going to understand people. And it happened to me with my mom and I in Nebraska as a young kid. We were there for Junior Olympics, some running event, and we were on a bus and there were some comments being made. And, you know, I'm sure they wouldn't have said that. You know, if my, well, I'm not sure, but I would like to, you know, probably maybe they wouldn't have been.
Hopefully.
Right. But I had a very stark experience with my dad traveling to Alabama in the, gosh, I don't know, maybe early 90s. Normally my dad would not travel. I wasn't allowed to go to the South with my dad. I always went to the South with my mom when we had events there, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, but he really wanted to go to Alabama this time. He really wanted to see the War Eagle, their mascot. And I think I've spent a lot of time this year thinking about that experience and just wondering what was going through his mind going there. I think he probably let his guard down a little bit and thought maybe things would be better and be okay to travel with me mm-hmm. to Alabama. And it really wasn't. It really wasn't. And I think we had an episode where we walked into a restaurant and the whole restaurant just stopped and like stared at us. And it was like a movie. And the rest of that trip, we never left the hotel. He would not let us leave the hotel. And I just, especially this year, as a parent and having a little bit more mature mindset and taking things more in context. At the time, I was just going bonkers, bouncing off the walls in the hotel room. Come on, yeah, Dad, let's go, let's go. But I just, thinking back, what was he thinking? He must have been scared. He must have been sad. You know, just so disappointing. So, you know, there's been moments like that or moments my mom will tell me about, you know, walking into a grocery store with me and my brother and her, and then my dad pushing my brother out in the cart at the grocery store, and this woman running up to my mom saying, "That man's, he's stealing your child."
Oh, God.
My mom being like, it's his dad.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, we've had some of those moments, but, you know, fortunately, by and large, I haven't had too many moments like that.
At the time, you know, when you were on that trip with your dad, so are you an Auburn alum, it sounds like?
Is that Auburn that has the War Eagle? I think, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
I'm not an Auburn alum, but my dad just, I don't know why he loves Alabama so much. They have this giant War Eagle, so he really wanted to see it.
That's hilarious. So when you guys were on that trip, I mean, now, of course, looking back, you can say that's what happened. That's why it happened. Did he not talk about it or did you guys not discuss it? And you just kind of, he just said, "Hey, we're just not leaving the hotel."
Yeah, I can see it so vividly. He was just laying on the bed, feet crossed, arms crossed, watching TV. And he's just like, "Nope, I'm not leaving." And I've thought a lot about that.
Yeah.
Now, this year, especially as a parent, where there was probably so much he wanted to say and so much complication to what was going on. And he just didn't really go into it. He was a pretty emotional person underneath it all. And I'm sure he was just a mix of emotions. So that was just him keeping it together and probably not wanting me to worry. I
needed to
go to the track the next day and run a race. So.
Right, obviously.
Yeah. And your concern for your daughter, you're a parent, but you're also a parent to lots of high school girls,
yeah.
Coach Chow. You are an athletic coach at my former high school, and you coach one of my dear, dear, dear friends and one of the interns for this show, who's just the most lovely young woman and apparently a fantastic runner.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't fangirl. I don't pay enough attention to stuff going on in the world.
You running,
you're
going to
give me a
fanning.
Runner's world.
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to get me runner's world.
That's right.
So talk to us a little bit about how you said that coaching is your passion. Tell us a little bit like how you got into coaching and why you love it so much.
I kind of stumbled into it just through the running community, found out that Castalea was hiring. This was about 7 years ago. And I live like four houses down from the school. So I was like, this is fantastic. I stumbled into it and it just kind of snowballed from there. I went to a high school very similar to Castalea. I went to an all-girls school about the same size. And I think there was a lot to just being, you know, starting my high school coaching career with a school that I understood so deeply personally. You know, my very first race that it was at Stanford, my alma mater, and we lost. Not only did we lose, we were last out of, I don't know, a lot of teams. And, I mean, we were so far at the bottom, I turned the page over I was like, surely there's somebody behind us, but nope. Nope, that was it. So that took a moment to kind of like register. But I love connecting with the girls. You know, we have a sense of, you know, run family. You said that in your intro, like, welcome to the family. You know, we have a kind of hashtag mantra about our run family. I think the high school, those 4 years are so transformative for young women. You know, when they come in as 14 years old, roughly, sometimes 13, sometimes just freshmen or 13, they're just so young. Mm. But they leave young women ready to just launch and to the rest of her life. And it's just so wonderful to be, it's an honor really to be a part of those 4 years for them. And so my approach to coaching, you know, the sport itself is just the vehicle for reaching these women to help them develop and know themselves and be ready to move on to the next chapter. You know, we don't spend a lot of time overemphasizing results. It's really approached as this is a bridge to the next thing. And I hope that they leave with running being part of their superpower to go on and do whatever they're going to do.
Hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Tara is now preparing to run a marathon or
half marathon
in December.
Yeah.
She doesn't seem like she's too excited about
No. My whole running story is I was a big time runner all the time. I didn't become an athlete till I was an adult. So when you talk about running at five, that just blows my mind. I became an adult athlete and I exclusively ran for several years. And I've run a couple of marathons. I've run three marathons and a ton of halves. And over the last, 5 or 6 years, it's been less consistent. It's just been like, if I see a race I want to run, I'll pick it up and I'll train for it. And so this one has just been interesting because I picked it up to it with a friend, but you know, it's gone virtual now and that makes it a little less fun. And, right. You know, and so it's just, it's been hard to be consistent on this training cycle. I keep telling myself to just get up and go do it. And it's just, I think in general, staying focused right now has been difficult for me.
Absolutely.
She needs you, Coach Shell.
Yeah, tell me what to do.
Do you offer virtual training sessions?
I would be happy to chat and connect on any of that.
We're going
to
do that.
The half marathon is such a great distance.
It is. I love that distance. Yeah, it's probably my favorite, honestly, because I feel like it's so doable. You can do it. You can train for it pretty quickly if you've got some, you know, a little bit of base on you. And so I've really enjoyed that one. People have asked me if I want to do a marathon again. I don't know. I mean, I enjoy it, but I don't know if it's as hard for you as it is for me, but that training cycle can be really tough.
It can be, it's long.
Yeah.
And it's also like, I feel like it's kind of dangerous, you
yes.
know, it's like you get to the end and you're always pushing your limits.
Yes. And I don't know if this, if maybe so you've been doing it so much longer, but I don't know if I'm not doing a really good job of taking care of myself, I always get sick. There's always two or three things that derail it a little bit and just make it that much harder.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, running so hard, the immune system gets a little bit challenged.
It does.
I mean, I think you said you were doing running exclusively. I think some people, I mean, I've had to remind myself of this, but the body doesn't really know the difference between, you know, it takes on the stimulus. So whether or not you're meeting that, you're taxing the system through a hard swim or a hard bike or hard running, you know, you can really add that variety, which I think helps. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly you need to have some specificity of the sport for sure. You can't swim all the time and then hit the road. But I think that kind of, sometimes people think, oh, I have to run. I have to only run if I'm going to run. But being an athlete, I think is really important, being very athletic. I think I joke, runners they're not athletic.
No.
Right? If you ask a marathoner to jump up onto a curb, it's going to be real funny.
Right.
We're really stiff and we don't really move.
It's true.
But we can run in a straight line for a long time.
Well, I think that the both of you are focusing on your distance too much. I think you both are long distance runners by a little bit too far. My favorite distance is the 20-yard dash I do from my couch to the bedroom about 8:45 every night. So I'm a sprinter. I sprint from the couch to the bedroom. That's it.
Tell people I'm built for distance, not speed.
And that's the problem, maybe.
Yes. It can be.
Yes. Now, Shell, does your daughter, is she a runner? Has she inherited your love of running?
She is like, I think she's like, she's got this little, it's like genie in a bottle. She's got this little athlete inside that's just, you know, like slowly starting to make itself known. Today we had a lunch date. She biked with me over to Stanford and I did hill reps and she had her little sandwich. And, so she's around it. She's swimming right now and we're really focused on the really important things about making sure she's consistent and she's trying really hard and she's showing up even when it's hard. And, you know, she's really immersed in it. She sees me and my teammates. I run for a professional team sponsored by the Wazelle, which is a women's apparel company based out of Seattle. And, she sees that larger team environment that I'm in of all these women that, you know, whether they're pros and Olympians or, you know, people who are just recreational, and she sees me all around that. And so I'm really just trying to immerse her into all the things that the sport gives you and how empowering it can be for you, whether or not you want to achieve, you know, really elite status, or if you want to just be a real healthy person who's active and uses their body the way it was meant to move.
Yeah. You're such a great advocate for the running community. If you had the chance to talk to a woman, one of our listeners, who is nurturing a young child who wants to be a runner, what would you say to that mom?
I think, you know, so much of when we want to be parents, we want to push so hard, right? We want to just give them everything. And, you know, sometimes it helps if we let them tell us what they need and we listen a bit more and we're just there to be supportive. So I think I would focus on creating, like putting them in the way of opportunity, but not forcing them. The drive really has to come from the athlete themselves, right? Otherwise, it's really short term.
Right.
And if you want them to have a long love for running or just a healthy, you know, active lifestyle, you really have to let that come from them. And so, you know, trying to just have a little bit more give with them, you know, set them up for success and let them find their way, which is hard to do, especially if most young athletes have parents who are also very driven. And so you kind of have to have some restraint. So for me, sometimes I try not to go to some of my daughter's things just to kind of give her, let her be her own space and find her way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Kanji said that was for our listeners, but that was for me. I needed the answer to that question.
Oh. I don't know. That's a tough question. I think a lot of the parents of the kids that I coach, you know, I've been fortunate that they trust that they can kind of, you know, work with me and they don't have to be so involved, you know, and they let kind of, that provides that space for the athlete to kind of have it be their own realm. So, you know, hopefully people can find something similar to help their athlete develop on their own time.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And I love that you've had such a great career. I love that we are going to be rooting you on for the 2024 Olympic trials.
Yeah.
Tara, we have a road trip ahead of us.
I'm excited. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to Google alert you real quick. We're going to be watching you on Wazelle the time.
Coach Shao, be very careful with this. I'm telling you, Tara develops these unhealthy obsessions. I can see it transferring from Zac Efron to you. So maybe it's time for you to just change your number.
That's funny.
Oh, no, thank you so much for sharing space with us. And thank you for taking the time this week to talk about your story and for letting us get to know you. You're an incredible woman. And I just will love to see what happens in the next chapter of your journey. But you're a champion.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful for you to reach out and wonderful talking with you tonight. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we enjoyed it so much, Coach. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, new friend. Powerful, strong woman. Powerful story.
So powerful. Are you ready to run a marathon?
Listen, I don't think you heard me clearly when I said Kanji's running is limited to a 20-yard dash. But no, true story. Okay. I ran a marathon once.
When?
Yes. In 2006, uh-huh. I ran the Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you did a big one.
I did.
Okay.
And as I was finishing like mile 24, I was on one leg hobbling through.
Yeah.
And everyone said, oh, you know, you get this runner's high when you know you're close to the end. Mm-hmm. And I turned to the man that was running next to me and I said, sir, you know, they say you get this runner's high. And he looked at me, he's like, yes, they lie. There is no runner's high. For me, it's just about completing a task.
Yeah.
And so I have no idea how I finished it, but I did finish it. And for me, running a marathon was a once in a lifetime
experience. Again, huh? Never.
I do not think that I have run 26 miles total in the 15 years since then.
Really?
I don't run
did
anymore.
Did you finish the race and then keep running and think maybe you would in the future? Or were you like, nope, I'm done. I crossed the finish line. I'm done.
The second I
know people that
the
do that. Yeah.
No, I was done. I blew my knee out around mile 14, and I really should have quit and stopped running. But I did severe damage to my knees. And actually, after that is when I turned to indoor cycling. And that's when I became a cycling instructor, which is when I became your cycling instructor.
That's right. It was meant to be.
So basically, if I had not run that marathon, you and I never would have met.
Well, thank goodness then. Yeah. You know, one of the things when she was sharing about the 2016 trials, which, I mean, still is just, I'm just buzzing from that whole conversation. I just vividly remember sitting and watching that. But when she was talking about, you know, her foot hurt and she made the smart decision to quit and, you know, or like just hang it up for the day, I was thinking to myself, like, that's what a healthy runner sounds like. I have so often been like the one out there that's like, oh, I can keep going. I have to finish. And then I end up hurting myself worse than I would have if I had just given it a minute.
But she also was talking about a lot of the challenges that she's made and a lot of the difficult decisions that she had to make.
It was a healthy decision to hang up her shoes for that race because her foot was in pain. But it also came through in all of her story, talking about being a pre-vivor, right, and getting tested for the genetic mutation, making decisions to take care of her body before she had to deal with breast cancer or possibly ovarian cancer down the road.
And making the decisions to put her health first.
First.
And taking the time to do that in the midst of raising a young child.
That's amazing.
It's challenging. And being able to, and knowing and recognizing that when we're making decisions as women and as mothers, mm-hmm, about our health, when you have small kids, you really need to be careful and mindful of what they're seeing and what we're able to tell them, what they can process.
Right.
You know, and for Coach Shao, having a 5 or 6 year old daughter couldn't understand what the breast cancer diagnosis is.
What the BRCA gene is. Right.
It's just mommy's boobies hurt.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, exactly right.
And so I think that I respect the way that she did that. And I'm just so glad that she took the time to share with us. And for any of you that are struggling with a breast cancer diagnosis, because it's so common, mm-hmm, 1 in 8. Mm-hmm. 1 in 8. So
yeah.
Just, you know, share your story with other people and share your story with a community of people who will listen and will love and support you through the difficult and challenging times.
Yeah, you are not alone in that.
Absolutely.
For sure. That was a great story.
So as we get ready to go into the last week of October 2020, mm-hmm, only 2 months left to go in this horrendous year.
Oh my gosh, fantastic. Bananas.
Yes. Well, let's talk about Halloween.
Yeah.
What do you have going on for Halloween? What's Gage going to be this year?
He decided on Link from The Legend of Zelda. So we just picked that costume up last week. And it's so, it might be the latest I've bought a costume. It just was not on my radar. I mean, it's still wild times. Are we doing Halloween? Is it safe to have Halloween? But he wanted that costume. So we picked it up. He's going to do that. And then our neighborhood is doing something interesting where they've set up a route among certain streets. And then anybody that wants to participate can put a table out with candy or a bucket out with candy. And then the kids will just, instead of knocking on doors, they can just parade down and pick up candy out of buckets or off of tables. Hmm, so that's what they're going to do in my neighborhood.
They have a plan. That's fantastic. There's
a woman in my neighborhood, God love her, and Halloween is her thing. And we usually have like a whole carnival and a trick or treat and a whole thing. But this year she's like, we are not canceling Halloween. Yes. And I just bow down. Thank God for people like that.
She is single-handedly saving Halloween for your community.
That's right.
Yeah, we don't have that up here.
So are you guys going to do anything?
We don't have a plan.
No plans?
Who knows? This is the first year that I do not have a costume for my son or my husband, because Halloween is his thing.
Really?
Too. Yeah. And my son asked me, Roman asked, he said, Mom, are we doing Halloween this year? And I was like, I don't know.
Everything kind of feels like that.
Yeah. Don't really want to make plans because you don't want to disappoint someone. Right. But yeah. I also am, shout out to Amazon Prime for having next day delivery. So he might, we get to the point where we decide to do Halloween this year, it will probably be on Wednesday.
Okay.
And the question will be, what is Roman going to be this year? Whatever costume gets delivered by Friday
at 5 Prime
p.m.
can what drop Prime? On the porch.
In a kid size extra large or
live
child,
with it,
or
you'll
adult,
be fine.
Adult small.
So, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So with that being said, we are going to prepare for Halloween or not.
Or not.
And just go into the last
week. Do what you want.
Go into the last week of October 2020, recognizing and understanding that we are survivors. We've survived a lot in 2020.
Yeah.
And we have ways to go, but we're going to get there together. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening to another episode of Motherhood in Black and White.
Thank you so much, guys. We love having you with us every week. As always, if you're listening to us on Apple or on Google, make sure you're subscribing. On Spotify, you can follow us. We love those reviews. Please keep hitting the 5 stars and leaving reviews and comments for us. We read all of them, and we appreciate you so very much.
Take good care.